You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver. Good evening, Jim. Good evening, Brad, to this very, very special WWDC 17 wrap-up show.
Hello and good evening.
Hidey-ho, neighbor.
Kind of feels like we got Nerd Christmas, Apple Nerd Christmas this week, and it hadn't come for like 5 years, given the breadth of announcements that happened this week.
Yeah, a lot of stuff went down. Good stuff for a lot of different folks.
So let's jump right into things really quickly. We're going to do probably a couple of these, but at least this will be our first pass, and there was so much covered, so much announced, that it's going to be hard to cover everything. So what we figured we would do is we'd pick five things that really interested us of this announcement and sort of talk about that, why we like it. And hopefully we picked five different things. So why don't we start with you, Brad? So let's jump into your first. I believe your first pick was the HomePod. So tell us why you're excited about that.
I'm pretty excited about the HomePod just because of the whole sort of the high fidelity audio part of it that they're doing, and that it's a smart speaker. So it's to me, it's kind of like the Amazon Echo on steroids as far as its audio capabilities. I do like when they announce that no audio is transmitted until you actually invoke Siri, unlike the Amazon device, which Amazon claims that is recording all the time.
Yeah, it is nice that they still make a focus on privacy for this, which is part and parcel for their philosophy on computing in general, is let's not be creepy.
They immediately answered my question as soon as they show the one device and they show it at the end of the family room there on the slideshow. I'm immediately thinking, well, what do you do if you have two? Can you do two and, you know, make one be left and one be right or whatever? And sure enough, they say, you know, the very next thing Phil Schiller says is, and even better, you get two of them, and they sort of line themselves up by listening to each other using the same acoustic sampling that they do to optimize all the audio that comes out of it.
Yeah, that was one of my first thoughts too, is when Phil said it's $350, I said, oh, it's $700 for me, because I'd want two of those things left and right.
That's right.
So given the size of the place that you live in, though, do you still see yourself doing two?
Oh, yeah. Just for the volume. I listen to my music pretty loud. My building is pretty old. At least right now, I know my neighbor, and we're very tolerant of him playing loud stuff and me playing loud stuff. So maybe by December, he's moving out soon. So maybe by December, I'll have a different idea. I mean, it's one of the reasons I haven't done Sonos up to now. I mean, myriad of reasons, but one of them was, you know, I didn't want to buy a Sonos One, and because it was too small, and then the 5 is big and more expensive. And I mean, this, I know how much I've enjoyed having the Dot connected with, I mean, I've got a pair of Logitech computer speakers plugged into it. I mean, they're nice. It's like, you know, the 2.1, well, they're not Logitech. They're actually whatever. I forget the name of them, but they're nicer. You know, they got two satellites and a sub. And so that's what's plugged into my Echo. And that's what I've been listening to music on for the last couple of months. Having something like this where, you know, you don't have wires run for speakers, can still be just as loud and nice, and you could ask it to play music or podcast or whatever else. I mean, I've really enjoyed my Dot. You know, if it gives me an excuse to get back into the Apple ecosystem and tie everything back together a little bit better, then that's me.
So is there anything you wanted to add? I know this was on your list too, Jim. So
one of the first things I thought of was the iPod Hi-Fi speaker from several years ago that Apple released for the iPod. It was like a iPod speaker dock, like a really big white speaker dock that they released that stayed out for about a year and then slowly just disappeared because it was horribly received and they didn't sell very many of them. I mean, Apple doesn't release many things that just crash and burn like that iPod Hi-Fi speaker did. So this was like, okay, Apple's trying to do another speaker. Let's see if they can get it right this time. And we can put a link to that in the show notes.
So since we all had some overlap, when we have the overlap, we're just going to sort of mark those items off each other's list, because I would like to, my take on this too is, I think I was anticipating something that was going to come out and it was going to just straight up take on Amazon's Echo. That's what I expected. What I didn't expect was for them to target the Sonos. And I think in retrospect, it seems kind of smart. So, you know, Apple is not going to release something that's analogous to the Echo Dot that's going to be like $79. It's just not something they're going to do. So, you know, they're going for a premium market. And I think the primary use case, probably for at least the three of us, would be music in most cases. If you're going to use it, you want to just yell out, play a song or a podcast or what have you, and it starts playing. And that's really what you kind of want. And I'm guessing Apple sort of saw that value as well. You know, rather, I mean, they are taking shot at, you know, the Amazon Echo, but they're also, this is really more a shot across Sonos's bow to sort of go after them, it looks like, especially since Sonos is going to be integrating, as we talked about a couple months back, since Sonos is going to be getting Alexa. I guess we know why now, because it's sort of a defensive move.
What's weird here is, I mean, it wasn't even 6 months ago that Apple added Sonos to Apple stores. Like, that was the first place where I had listened to them in Best Buy a little bit, but the Best Buy is so hard to get a feel for those things. And the Apple store, I actually, you know, with an iPad plugged into it, listened to a couple of the different Sonos speakers. So that's where I'd actually listen to those. I wonder if that means they'll stop selling Sonos speakers when their speaker comes out.
Just remember that Apple used to sell Fitbit in their stores, and I don't think they do that anymore once the Apple Watch came out. So I don't think the Alexa integration wasn't announced until, I think, April of this past year. So it was only a couple months ago that was announced. So I think that was, I think that was something that's probably going to change the relationship between Apple and Sonos. I don't expect that they'll keep selling those anymore. I do like the fact that it does have Apple's chip in it, as to be expected. So I think it was an A8, right? That was the chip that was in it.
That's right.
It was an A8. So not the most recent generation, but you're also not driving graphics with this, so not a big deal. The amount of engineering that went into both the tweeters, the mics, it looks very impressive. And all of the reviews from the people that got the hands-on with them seemed suitably impressed. So I expect this is going to, this is going to be an item. I think our friend of the show, Broom Man, Donnie Broom, had said, wow, that's expensive. Brian, let me know how it is. And I kind of laughed to myself when I read that, because the implication was not if you're going to buy one, but of course you're going to buy one. And yes, he's right. I will probably buy one. I will start with one just to see if I like it. But the obvious question that comes up with this is that if you're going to be depending on Siri to provide the same sort of functionality, they really, really need to beef up Siri. I don't think Alexa is as that much better than Siri in a lot of regards. Most of the things that I ask it seem beyond its capabilities anyway, except the very same things that I can already ask Siri, but they really still need to get better. It's not good enough to be feature parity. You have to be better than your competition. If you want me to pay $350 for something, I want it to do something more than the thing that does $79. You know what I mean? Or even $129 or $199.
$50 for a dot.
Well, if you remember, it seemed like every third sentence they were mentioning machine learning. So there's something going on in the background that they haven't announced yet, that they're really pouring a lot of resources into their machine learning, even so much that they're starting to do machine learning with the Metal engine just so to help optimize it and speed it up.
You would have to hope that doing what they're doing with their own CPU architecture, they have their entire future in their hands, right? They're not beholden to anyone. They can't, if they succeed or fail at this, or rather if they fail at this, they don't really have anyone to blame from themselves from a computing perspective. They can't say, oh, well, Intel didn't give us something great or what have you. They're the ones designing this. Since they do have an emphasis on privacy, you know, this is going to be something that's important. And you saw at the Google I/O about a month ago how Google was touting the fact that they're taking a lot of the same technology they have in their cloud computing capabilities and putting that into their CPU architecture. You know, they're taking a page out of the Apple playbook, and I think this is kind of an important thing.
The killer use case for me is you buy two of them, you pair them with an Apple TV, and they can be the television speakers for your Apple TV and be able to play, you know, like movie television sound and sync up with what's on the screen. I think that you know, that's going to be a tough thing to try to make all work together. So we'll see if they can pull that one off. To me, that's the killer feature that I'm hoping they can do.
Side note, did you see the AirPlay 2 stuff that they were touting as well? That looked like, that in and of itself kind of looks Sonos-like in its ability to be a little bit smarter about letting things move from place to place. So I guess when they announced the speaker at the very end, it's like, that's where they're tying it all together. Okay, that kind of makes sense. All right, keeping it moving. The next item on your list was the iMac Pro. Tell us why you're excited about that, Brad.
I'm excited about it, number one, because I really like the iMac I have now. It's the two generation old 5K iMac, one generation older than yours. And I really like the space gray. Like both Tim and the other guy said, you know, it looks really badass. So I really like that you can jam so much RAM in it. And the 18 core, I guess, build to order option is, that's just crazy. I would never have.
It's the ludicrous speed option.
I mean, I would never have a need to run 18 cores here in my house. I just don't need that. But
it's also the first iMac with a Xeon processor option as well. I think that's kind of a.
Yeah, right.
Because most of the iMacs have always been sort of laptop parts in a desktop configuration. And this is most assuredly not a laptop computer. This is even though it's not to be confused with an actual Mac Pro replacement that'll be coming, you know, a year or 2 years, whatever, from now. It's definitely, this is a workstation class box that's being put into an iMac body, which is really kind of crazy when you think about it.
I guess what was eye-catching too was the video they showed of the animation of the cooling mechanism. And that's definitely sort of game-changing as far as having an all-in-one that can do such good cooling. They said it was 80% better than what you and I have now. And then another thing I wonder about, do you think the RAM sticks will be the long, you know, 4.5-inch long RAM sticks, or were they going to be the our usual laptop size RAM like we have now in the iMac?
I need to look that up. That's a very good question. I would have to imagine if everything else is server class hardware that you're going to be seeing, you know, the longer, I'm assuming DDR4 RAM is what we're looking at there.
I kind of wonder, I mean, it was pretty powerful. I mean, do you think this is eventually going to be that new Mac Pro that they touted last month, or
no? This is not. They've already. I think most of the sites that I've been following have said this is not to be confused with the Mac Pro. This is not
okay.
The device that, I mean, they even said it's not. That's not coming this year. So 1 month later to turn around and release this and go surprise, we were lying. Seems highly dubious. I think where this comes in is. This is, I don't want to say it's a stopgap product, but between this and the fact that you can do external GPUs, which is something I talk about in my section, this gives you something to definitely hold you over until you get yourself a real Mac Pro and those things are released.
With all the modular replaceable components and upgradable components.
Which is really the selling point.
I'm still kind of shocked that they've got this awesome computer with this beautiful monitor that they're not selling just the monitor yet. That kind of surprises me that they don't have a pull out the monitor and buy just the monitor option.
Well, remember, we've heard rumors that they're going to be making their own 5K or 8K display at some point in the future. I think 8K was the last rumor that we heard. So it's not unheard of. I mean, that's not to say that they're not going to do it, but this hasn't been something that they've been interested in. And if you think about it, that makes sense. What would you attach to that monitor, right? You're not. What are you going to have that drives it? Well, you do have the current MacBook Pro that could drive it.
My Dell.
You know, and no one who has a PC is going to buy an Apple branded monitor anyway. I mean, it's not going to happen.
I put my Alienware into it.
I mean, they really haven't had anything that could drive it yet that was, say, desktop class like an iMac. I mean, this will be the first iMac that'll be able to drive a 5K display, an external display.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't really fault them for doing that. They haven't released a monitor since, what, 2010, 2011, something like that. It's been a long time. So, they've shown little interest in it. Not really surprising. They've never made something that was 4K or 5K that wasn't an iMac.
I mean, but I'm just saying, how easy would it be to just pull out all the guts of the computer and take that screen and make a monitor out of it? I guess maybe the margins aren't there, or I don't know.
No, I'm sure they could. The thing is not having much to be able to drive it at this point. When the new Mac Pros come out, I would be surprised whenever that day comes, if it's a year from now, year and a half. At that point, I would be surprised if they didn't have a monitor. Like the MacBook Pros or the from last fall would probably be the only thing that you would have that would come close to be able. I mean, you could drive a 5K monitor with that. But what are you going to use, a Mac Mini? No, that's not going to work. You can't do it with that. And they don't make any other standalone computers other than the 2013 Mac Pro, so.
I could drive it with my MacBook Pro 15-inch, right?
Well, that's what I said. There's only one model of computer that can do it, and it's only been out 6 months.
And instead of sidelining, you know, so much of their efforts, and obviously, you know, they've got, say, seven new updates to the Mac line, and then a proposed, an announced update to the, you know, for this new iMac Pro. You know, they had LG go and create these other 4K and 5K displays for these for when they release the MacBook Pros with the USB-C. Like I said, just so they don't sideline all of their efforts. But at the same time, I actually follow all of a lot of the discussions, the threads about these LG 5K monitors, and people hate them. I mean, they trash them online.
Yeah, they had the Wi-Fi problem where if your base station was too close to your monitor, it would have issues. Yeah, I mean it's not been a great thing, but again, their attention span is finite. The amount of things they can work on is finite. I would much rather them work on everything else and not worry so much about the standalone monitor. All right, so moving along, the next thing on your list, Brad, was the iPad Pro 10.5 inch. The rumored mythical device actually did exist, and we did get a lot of new hardware at the WWDC 17 keynote. So tell us why you're excited about that.
I like the edge-to-edge screen, just the fact that it's a little bit, not much bigger than the 9.7, but you get the larger screen sort of in a almost same size form factor, if you will. Half a terabyte of storage, that's just crazy in a solid state tablet type device. I really like the leather sleeve with the pencil holder built in, just because I see people with theirs and you see them like at Starbucks or wherever else and you see it roll off the table, or you see them chasing for it around in their computer bag or whatever it is they may be carrying it with, you know, because they may carry it in a backpack along with their laptop or whatever.
Jim, why are you excited about the 10.5? And I'll have a little bit to say about this too.
Well, first off, I'm so excited. I've already ordered one. I've been wanting a new iPad with cellular, so I was waiting for a refresh. I've currently got a 12.9 iPad Pro. And so this one, the fact that it's just a little bit smaller in the screen, but it's a half a pound lighter. It's a full, like, 33% less weight. The 12.9 is a pound and a half, and the 10.5 is only a pound for, you know, carrying onto the plane. The 12.9 works well on longer distance flights, bigger planes for me. But on my short flights, and with a little bit more crunch seats, it's a little bit crowded, especially if there's somebody next to me. So I'm looking forward to the screen size, the full size keyboard, which I'm really excited about in that size form factor, but with, you know, just a little bit less iPad to be holding in my hand. And I got a cellular version, and I went 256. I didn't go all out 512 because I've never even filled up the 256 I have now, even come close to it. So I just went with the 256.
Did they leave the headphone jack off of the new iPad?
You know, I'm not sure on the iPad. I think it's there, but the thing that you didn't mention, Brad, is that the SD card slot and the headphone jack and the Ethernet jack are all still on the iMac Pro.
I still don't get the SD card jack. I guess it's just because of the photographers in their pro class of folks. Just they want to be able to just pull the SD card out and stick it straight in, you know, into the back of the Mac and not have to use like a USB adapter or whatever. Like I have a USB adapter that I use for my SD cards, and it's really for just whenever I'm creating a boot disk for a Raspberry or something. I'm not a photographer at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's really all the reason I use mine still at this point too. And again, I use my phone for photography more than I would use a camera anyway, but it does have at least the legacy ports on the iMac Pro. So,
but being a network guy, I can't go without Ethernet. I just got to have it. And that's another thing that was exciting about the new iMac Pro was the 10 gig Ethernet.
The 3.5 millimeter headphone jack is still on the new iPads.
I guess it wasn't very brave. So I'm in the same camp as you, Jim. I did go ahead. I actually ordered a 12.9 inch and a 10.5 inch, 512 gig cellular on both, and I will keep one and return the other. I just did it so that I would have them both on launch day. I have no particular reason for doing that other than that, but one of them will definitely be going back, and I already know what the 12.9 is like, but I do want to see what the 10.5 is like. And having that and the keyboard set up next to my 12.9 with the keyboard, I can kind of see, all right, how much real estate do I have? Does this feel natural? I don't fly as much as I used to, but I had that definite problem when I was on planes with the 12.9 of some jerkwad jamming the seat back, and you know, I always anticipated it was going to happen, so I'd always leave the iPad far enough up on the tray table. And I also have a little widget that I travel with that the iPad sits in that I didn't use the case, so the keyboard cover for that. So I was smart about it, but still, it was a pain to do. So
Yeah, I mean, you're a big guy. I'm a big guy. I mean, just even now, you're so wide naturally that just sitting in that seat, it's with somebody next to you, it's harder to type on that bigger device. And I'm hoping the smaller device makes that a little bit easier.
Let's be honest. You could have somebody the size of a nimble ballerina, and it's still not a lot of room that you're dealing with. I try to always go.
That's usually what I try to have sit next to me is nimble ballerinas. So.
Oh, my God. I wish that was the case for me. I always try to do premium economy whenever I can, so at least I get a little bit more room. I can't imagine in normal coach what it would be. I'd barely have enough room to put my phone on a seat back, as you know, let alone a tablet of any type. I've never really liked the fact that the iPad Pro, the 12.9, was really heavy. So maybe I'm hoping with a 10.5, you know, it's going to take me probably a good day or so to figure out which one I'm going to keep and which one I'm going to take back. But I want to make the most use of that Verizon Unlimited plan that I have. And most of that has been on the iPad. Like when I take advantage of something, the other night, you know, I was traveling and I wanted to watch the series finale of The Leftovers. And my parents' internet, I was afraid it was going to be a little bit slow. So I tethered to my iPhone and fired up HBO Go and I watched it. But out of the 10 gig you're allowed on tethering, between that and Silicon Valley, I used 8 gig in an hour and a half. So that's not going to fly going forward. So I definitely need that cellular version for that unlimited data, because I absolutely will use that like crazy. So I'm thinking I'm going to like the 10.5, but if not, I know I can get my money's worth out of the 12.9. So let's see what else was on your list there, Brad. So we had iPad Pro. Talk to us about iOS 11 and what makes you excited. That's the next thing on your list. And I think I have some things to say. And I bet Jim does too.
The first thing would be the one-page control center. That was one of the first things that caught me off guard with iOS 10, was having to swipe to the right or the left, whichever way, to be able to get to the second page that controlled your music. I like that they've integrated the 3D touch into some of the, what did he call it? It wasn't a panel. It was something else he called the little section of the control center, but being able to 3D touch to get more fine-tuned controls, more granular controls over whatever it is you may be adjusting, be it the song volume or something or another. I do like AR Kit. I really see some cool things coming along with that. The whole demo that Weta did, the Peter Jackson crew. It was cool how they laid out that whole little town or whatever on the table, and you see the guys come in, and the guy actually jumps off of the table when he's getting shot at.
That made me laugh so much. I was like, whoa, that was insane when the guy just jumps off the table.
And there's like debris and stuff flying off of the edge of the table from the buildings that are crashing or blowing up. I do like that they've got H265 or HEVC built into the new OSs, just because it really has become the new standard of compression, but not all of the apps have it built in.
I've got to read up on that.
You know, that's one of the things I'm excited about to see in iTunes when it comes along to High Sierra. I take a lot of screenshots whenever I'm helping people. I do a lot of hand-holding with people, with my customers and stuff, and I can always screenshot and open it and say sketch, or, you know, now I can do it within the Messages app where you just touch on it and mark it up. But I do like the way it sort of sidelined it to the edge and gives you a whole set of pens and pencils and markers and other things to be able to mark up with.
So, Jim, iOS 11 was on your list as well. What is it you're liking about that?
So definitely at the top of my list was the one-page control center. Just like Brad, I use that quite a bit on my phone, and popping up and then scrolling side to side, you know, where am I looking? What am I doing? I really like the way they've made that really compact and everything right there on the screen. That works great. All of the iPad productivity updates I'm really excited about. I mean, we just covered, you know, that I'm already an iPad Pro user. I've ordered a 10.5. The dock looks amazing. We're getting drag and drop. What were some of the other? Those were the two big ones. But, you know, just some other productivity things with the iPad that are being built in. Finally, you know, we're getting some kind of desktop feel enhancements to the iPad that I think it's needed like 3 or 4 iOS versions ago. And then we're finally, I mean, if you went back and listened to us talk about like last year's shows, you would hear us say, you know, man, I really hope they do some productivity stuff for the iPad, and they've finally done it. So that was great. A couple of the other smaller things, Apple Music social sharing looks pretty neat. I'm hoping that works well. I like it in Spotify. The Photos app is got some updates. I mean, it's Apple trying to keep up with some of its competitors, like Photos app. is, you know, trying to keep up with what Google Photos is doing, you know, so can it catch up? Apple Music's trying to keep up with Spotify. And then the peer-to-peer Apple Pay, I think, is going to be pretty nice, too. We use Venmo quite a bit at work. If we go to lunch and somebody picks up, you know, the whole tab, or go to dinner and everybody just pays each other with Venmo. So we'll see how well that works. And last but not least, on the fun side, I thought the Pokemon update with the AR kit looked pretty sharp. So, yeah, I'm real excited. I think besides the 10.5-inch iPad, the enhancements to iOS 11 are, I'm really excited about. It's going to take everything I've got not to want to jump on that first beta.
Ditto to that. So my thoughts on the iOS 11 and in regards to the iPad Pro specific features, it's nice that things – you're getting some sort of windowing capabilities. That's kind of nice built into it. Being able to use the switcher for your split screen and actually being able to pick the app that you want to do instead of cycle through like it's Wheel of Fortune and hope that the app that you want is somewhere in there is going to be really nice. But I guess in broader strokes, the better part of it is that it's trying to appeal to a demographic that's not interested in a quote unquote big iPhone, right? A lot of us, when we first saw the iPad, were kind of unimpressed. Because you're thinking, oh, this is just a big iPhone. And then you use it, and it's like, okay, yeah, it is, but it's a little bit different. I think that's part of the reason it's been stale, is that you don't really have much for power users. There really wasn't much of an advantage of using an iPad over an iPhone, except a bigger screen. And that just wasn't enough for some people. I've been using my iPad Pro when I travel as my primary computer for about, well, I don't know, since it came out in November of 2015. And this makes it so much more useful to me than it was before, that it's not even funny. This, it really makes it feel like it's becoming a real computer. And one of the things I thought about was, you look at Microsoft and they're trying to make Windows more like a mobile operating system. We're having the touch features and you integrate those into something that's traditionally a desktop computer. It looks like Apple is taking the opposite approach, and they're taking a mobile first operating system and they're adding just enough desktop type capabilities to it that you can use those as needed, but it's still not primarily a desktop operating system. It's still a touch-based operating system, touch-driven operating system with just enough of those desktop features to make it like a Mac, but not the same as a Mac. I like that they're not replicating. This is not a Mac that they're doing over and over. They're doing something that's similarly functional, but distinctly different.
Yeah, they're going the right direction. I definitely think taking some desktop stuff and putting it into mobile is a lot better than taking mobile stuff and trying to shove it into your desktop. I mean, Apple's done some of that with Mac OS, but not near as much. And I definitely agree with you from the it's a large screen iPhone point of view. It is a large screen iPhone. That's one of the great things about the iPad. You can do all the things you do on your iPhone, but it's a lot bigger screen. But the fact that you have that lot bigger screen means you can do so much more with it besides that. And that's where I think the real benefit of an iPad comes into play.
Definitely agree. So the last thing on your list there, Brad, was macOS High Sierra, which, can I just say, I wish they would get away from the stupid cutesy places in California names and just stick with the numbering scheme. And why are we still in the 10.x? macOS 10 has been around since 2000. Could we at least get to version 11? Could that go up to 11 already?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that the other day. Like, we're still on macOS 10. They're not calling it, you know, macOS X, like you hear some people call it macOS X, when there it's really, it really, the nomenclature was macOS 10. But I agree with you. They definitely need to get away from the 10 dot versions.
And what a better time would that have been when iOS passed 10 and went to 11? You could have had both of them in sync. It would have been
exactly.
And I think even tvOS they call 10 as well. You could have had all of your operating. I know it's a silly thing and it's arbitrary, but it was a missed opportunity.
Well, it would also cut down on some of the versioning. Then you could just say, or, you know, some of the cross versioning, you could just say, I'm either on macOS 10 or macOS 11, and you wouldn't have to go 10.12.4 or 10.12.5. And because, you know, you and I both know that there are distinct versions, distinct differences between, say, 10.11, 10.12, 10.12.1, and on and on.
I can never remember which one is which and what order they came in. And you're right, there are distinct differences. They had that whole MDNS responder, or, you know, if you want to refresh your DNS cache, older versions, you do this. Newer versions, you do this. Some things work this way. I mean, it's kind of crazy. You can upgrade just about every Mac to older versions, but a lot of people still don't.
I was in a newspaper shop the other day, and everybody has it's a local newspaper, by the way. It's not some paper owned by a large company. Conglomerate or anything like that, but everybody has a Mac on their desk, whether they're a writer or a reporter or a graphics person, you know, whatever. Even the person that people come in and pay for their newspaper subscription, even that person that takes their credit card information, she has a Mac at her desk, which seems like overkill, just seeing as how, what is she going to use it for? You know, she's got this nice, powerful iMac on her desk, and she pretty much just uses it for email and surfing, whatever. You know, if the boss has the money, why not? I guess my point is, though, like when I went in there the other day, they definitely have some older ones that were running like Snow Leopard, you know, 10.6.8. They had the latest update of Snow Leopard 10.6.8, and some of them were old enough that I was actually in there to upgrade several of them, but you couldn't make the direct jump from, say, Snow Leopard to Mavericks. I would have to, say, jump it from Snow Leopard to Lion and then go up to Mavericks or higher, and some of them weren't even new enough to take higher than Mavericks. They had some Macs in there that are that old. Some of the writers had some really old Mac Minis. But anyway, I was able to get everybody at least on Mavericks, and that is somewhat modern. I guess Mavericks is what, 10.10 or 10.9? Anyway, they're at least, everybody's at least past the cats.
You reminded me of something that I meant to bring up when we were talking about iOS 11, you know, talking about those older versions of Mac OS and how, like, Safari is what it is in those versions. You're not going to get a new version of Safari to run on that old version, I don't think. Correct me if I'm wrong, Brad, but like Chrome, you know, you can run a new version of Chrome in that old version of Mac OS or OS 10, right?
To a point, you can.
So even they, I think even they that's have one of the limitations with Apple's own apps in iOS. Where I was talking about Apple Music trying to compete with Spotify and Photos trying to compete with Google and Mail trying to compete with, you know, Spark and whoever else is, you know, got mail apps. Because we only get these big updates once a year for those benchmark applications, I think that's really hampering them. I mean, because Photos, they might be able to catch up with what Google Photos is doing with this update. But as soon as they release it, Google Photos has got, you know, updates over the next 3 months, and they've already passed it up again. And we don't get a new version of iOS again until next September. I think that's a problem with all that stuff being baked into the OS, and you're really only getting major updates at OS time for those apps. I think that's a problem for Apple that they're going to have to figure out.
Well, you're also dealing with cloud applications versus actual locally running applications too, right? If you're using Google Photos, that's all happening in the cloud. You're using Gmail, it's all happening in the cloud. I'm not disagreeing with you, but it's something that's constantly being iterated and something that's easier to keep current. It's just a completely different paradigm.
Well, but the Google Photos app runs on my phone, and I can look at all my photos in it and do a bunch of stuff in it, just like the Photos app on my phone.
Yeah, it's just running. It's just running as a wrapper for you to give you that nice iOS interface for things that live in the cloud.
Yeah, I was about to say, where do you think that the thing is actually happening? It's not on your device.
But it's the same thing with Apple Photos. I don't have all my photos downloaded to my.
It's not the same thing.
I mean, it's essentially a Python wrapper that's running for your Google apps, whereas the iOS apps are totally different. You have a UI that's built in Objective-C that's just sending calls.
It's a glorified web browser that's running on top of.
Well, Apple needs to fix that, because I think they can't iterate as fast because they're not in the cloud. Maybe that's one of the reasons they can't do it as fast.
They can't iterate as fast, but also too, that's also going back to privacy. Everything is happening on device with your Apple products, where it's happening in the cloud with Google's products. So one of the things that was an annoyance for people that used Photos was that if you recognized your faces in a photo.
Yeah, what a pain.
Previously, you had to do it on all your devices. Right? You had to do it on your iPad, your iPhone, and your Mac. It's stupid. And, you know, Google didn't have that problem. Of course, you know, in this version, they don't. I agree with you in the sense that I think applications need to be divorced from the OS. I think that that in iOS and macOS is a big mistake. I think there should be new versions that come out throughout the year. I would disagree from a web browser perspective. Safari, I'll disagree with you on, and I'll take the contrarian point of view on that one, because first of all, Chrome has the same thing where, I mean, it'll support more versions of macOS probably than Apple does in that regard. But even that, right, you couldn't have Snow Leopard and run a recent version of Chrome, I'm guessing. I mean, that's probably not going to happen.
You're totally right. There's no way you're going to be able to install, say, Chrome 53 on Snow Leopard. It just won't happen.
And a lot of those things that they do are so tied into the OS. I mean, I kind of wish it wasn't, but it is. So you can't really count on those features being there. And I think the difference there is also they give away the operating system for free. And it runs on all hardware that's, I think, 7 years old or less in most cases, give or take. So I think my 2009 iMac still will support it. It did Sierra. So, and it says every machine running Sierra will still run High Sierra. So my 2009 iMac will be able to run the latest version when it comes out. So, you know, that at least, there's no excuse for not updating your OS. I run into people too, as well, who never do that. And it's mind boggling because it's free. It's already, you get notifications and nag to go ahead and do it. Why wouldn't you do it? But there you have it. I mean, but photos and things, I will agree, that needs to be a little bit more divorced from the operating system. Apple File System, I think you were excited about that as well, Brad.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of ZFS on FreeBSD. I have several FreeNAS servers distributed around the Jackson area doing file services for people in their offices. I just like that they're going to bring a lot of those enterprise class. Apple is going to bring a lot of those enterprise class file system features to APFS.
And as we mentioned a couple months ago, they did roll it out in 10.3 to all iPhone users. So if you're using 10.3 on your iPhone, that update took a little bit longer to apply as you were getting rid of HFS Plus and replacing it with APFS, which is really kind of cool. So at least you do have a use case where it's deployed to millions upon millions of devices.
That's right. And that may have been their test bed, sort of. You know, if you have the toggle in the positive for your to send all of your DAG information to the Apple developers, I mean, that's probably their big test bed, if you will, or their sandbox for everything.
Though you're not probably going to be creating snapshots on your iPhone, but still, no, the point's taken, though. It's still a large install base, so that's kind of nifty. So as we've been going through these, we've covered a lot of Jim's list that has overlapped with Brad's list.
I had a comment on APFS, and all I said is, I'm guessing this is going to be a good thing. I mean, I know it's the file system and it's very important, but from my point of view, it'll generally make things better. The big hurdle there being, you know, as long as it doesn't mess anybody up converting to it, then then that makes it better for everybody else in the long run. So, I mean, that first hurdle's got to be a small one to get over for the gains after.
I mean, there's always going to be people that are going to run into a speed bump or a bump in the road when it comes to converting from HFS over to APFS. I can see, Jim, where you're going to see it probably a big improvement on the way you manage, if you do VM snapshots, the way you do your VM snapshots, because you'll have no write copy or however, whatever the wording is for that, no write copy snapshots to where, you know, if you invoke that in Parallels or VMware Fusion, it's going to sit there and write this giant file twice to your computer, and it'll be a much faster, much more simplified process in APFS.
That was the use case that I was going to bring up as well. And also, we saw last week when you were copying files from, you know, you can transfer files between one Mac to another. It's going to be more efficient in your ability to do things like that. Even though you like to pretend this doesn't matter to you, bringing it back to like databases, right? You work with Oracle, right? How advanced is
Oracle? Yeah, well, Oracle doesn't run on any Mac hardware, so
Doesn't run on any Mac hardware, but it's file systems. I know you've had to mess with ASM and similar things before. There's a good reason you're not using a standard file system. Well, sometimes you can put those data disks on. That's a whole, I better stop or we'll be here all night. But the same benefits you see in the enterprise with actual enterprise grade operating systems, we're finally getting.
Yeah, we don't need to Syracuse it.
Absolutely not. I'm sure he'll do that himself. So the one thing that didn't have any overlap with anything that was already mentioned was the Apple Watch. So tell us what you're excited about for the Apple Watch, Jim.
So there were two things, both around workouts. I thought the sync with gym equipment was very cool. You know, whether it, I ever come across any gym equipment ever that'll utilize this, you know, it's probably going to, what they say, at least the fall before that stuff starts showing up in gyms. But I think that's really neat. One of the things that annoys me is when I'm doing cardio, I have the watch is keeping up with my heart rate, but the machine also has to keep up with my heart rate on the cycle because that's how it sets the resistance. Like it'll adjust my resistance based on my heart rate. And so as soon as I take my hands off to do something on my phone or here lately, I've been reading Kindle books, you know, as soon as you take your hands off the heart rate thing on the machine, you know, it starts flashing at you. Hey, I need your heart rate so I can set this stuff. So that'll be nice where, you know, you don't have to worry about any of that. It's getting it on your wrist and that's all synced up. And also the multiple workouts. Right now, I'll generally go and do 30 minutes of cardio and then mill about and do some weights and other stuff. And right now that's set up as two separate workouts. Like I start a cardio and, you know, I start a cycle, indoor cycle. And then I think I just pick like a other workout and set up another one when I'm walking around doing all the other. To be able to just string workouts together like that should be kind of nice.
So since we have some overlap there, I'll mention that as well. First of all, I don't think when you're doing the heart rate on strength training that it captures something accurately, I think. And that's true for any device, not just the Apple Watch. I tried to measure that early on, and then I did some reading, and then I quickly abandoned doing that. However, if you're a triathlete, this is absolutely fantastic because you can do the cardio, then you can do swimming, then you can do something like that. So if you're preparing for an Ironman or something, you are completely set. The sync with the gym equipment, the one thing I like about, you know, doing a large national chain gym, as I'm sure you do, is that more than likely, they'll probably do it. My LA Fitness that I use, they were pretty quick to support the Apple Watch for check-ins, even though it was very obvious from the look on people's faces at my local LA Fitness that I was probably the only person I saw that was doing that on a regular basis. I was the Apple Watch guy.
Here comes that nerd.
Pretty much. Look at the nerd with his funny elliptical and his watch. Ooh.
But now you're like the Beastmaster, though.
So yeah, that was definitely novel. But I would be very surprised. Pretty much, I have done 100 and what is this? This is the 6th that we're recording this. So we're coming up on 150 days, maybe? Yeah, close to straight in a row of cardio. So yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that. See, I used to have the Polar Heart Strap, and all your gym equipment always worked with the Polar Heart Straps. So you could get up there, you could start your thing, and you didn't have to hold the handles or any of those things that would take your heart rate. It just automatically worked, and it was brilliant. It kept me on a different fitness program for the longest time, other than using the Apple Watch, because of that integration. Now, eventually, that other program got the support of, you know, for Apple Watch, but it took over a year to get that. You know, I'm very excited about this. But the other thing that's nice about it, if you noticed in the demo, that it looked like it was using NFC to be able to do this. The big takeaway from this is that in the past, Apple has only allowed NFC for Apple Pay. It looks like they're opening it up to other things to be able to use this, hopefully, not just them. I'm hoping. I'm very, very hopeful about that, but we'll see. But I do look forward to that just so that, you know, sometimes I doubt how accurate the green laser is, but I have been in the last few months since I got rid of the Polar Strap, I have been double checking. Like if I glance at my watch and I see what my heart rate is, I'll double check by gripping the handles on the elliptical for a couple of minutes. And it always lines up. I mean, it's within a beat or two. So it's actually pretty good. The trick for me is to keep the band tight enough that it actually gets a good reading. Sometimes I don't, and that's when it usually is off. But if you keep it on there pretty tight, it's been more accurate than any other green laser. And I've had a couple, any other green laser sensor that I had. I think I had one of the Mio Fits or something like that a couple of years ago and eventually dropped it because it wasn't accurate. But this is definitely not that. So I agree with you on that.
I know it was already like the longest keynote ever or something crazy, but are either of you surprised we didn't see anything about the health kit or any of the new stuff like monitoring, glucose monitoring, any of that kind of stuff that we've saw in the news lately? None of that was announced yesterday, or do you think that was just not keynote centric stuff and that we'll have some health kit stuff that'll come out during the conference?
So if you're doing the Kremlinology, as they call it, and you're looking at the things, some of the subtleties that were announced, during the watchOS part, they specifically mentioned that their glucose monitoring was with an external sensor. So that to me sort of telegraphed, hey, this isn't ready yet for, you know, the thing that we're working on. Just pretend it doesn't exist until further notice. So the fact that they actually called out an external sensor, and other people on Twitter caught that as well.
Right. They said it was working with the Dexcom sensor, which is a well-known sensor in the diabetes community.
Right. So that was the tell that it's not there yet. I think that's probably that's gonna be the biggest thing, right? If that's what they're working on as the, I mean, what is it really missing at this point? I mean, it can do a lot as it is. I'm not really surprised that we didn't hear anything about that, because that is a really hard nut to crack.
Speaking of the watch, did anybody notice how good Phil Schiller looked? Like, he looks like he's lost a good bit of weight even since the last time they did a thing. Like, I think he's really wearing his watch a lot or something, because he looks a lot better than he used to be. He used to be kind of a tubby guy.
He's closing in all the rings.
When you're up there with Federici and Tim, come on, he's going to look like a big guy next to those guys. So you got to slim down a little bit. I was holding the control key.
So we've covered all of Jim's. We've covered all of Brad's. Let's go through mine really quickly. We've covered even some of mine. The things, a couple that I wanted to mention, though, was the new iPads at the 120 hertz with a pencil gives it 1 millisecond less than the Surface Pen. So I really think that what they've done with the iPad is they're really taking a shot at the Surface in general as a product, right? So now you have a pencil, the stylus, that's actually better for illustrators than if you want to go sheerly on speed, at least by 1 millisecond. iOS 11 had a lot deeper integration with the pencil than previous iterations, from the note taking and the graphics and being able to unlock with the lock screen with the pencil, just little things like that. It's pretty clear that they're taking the Surface market pretty seriously. So it took them a long time to get there, but between this and the Mac-like features of iOS 11, I think they're looking to really sort of take a strike back at the Surface line. Not that I wanted a Surface anyway, but I feel better about that.
Well, it's not going to take much for them to kill that other line, I feel like.
No, I mean, I think we talked about it a podcast or two ago. I kind of had what I felt like was an unhealthy lust for the Surface. I liked the last one they announced. It looked pretty sharp. Keyboard and that Alcantara keyboard and all the stuff they were doing with it. So yeah, you know, it's nice that they're firing back with some nice iPad productivity things for us that we've been asking for years.
Well, not just that. You think about it, Apple historically has been sort of the computing brand of the creative. That was sort of the hook that they used to get. Oh, that person's a graphic designer. Of course, they're using a Mac, you know, when everyone else was using PCs. So to see Microsoft release the things like the big Surface that looked like an iMac, or to take such pride in the Surface tablets to be able to draw with, it's nice to see Apple stepping up and sort of addressing that. It kind of felt like a lot of yesterday was, in general, remember the scene from The Godfather where it's where Michael goes, you know, we're closing all the outstanding family business, right? We're taking care of everything that's been out there. Between this and VR and AR, which is the other item on my list that I wanted to talk about, we got the great demo Brad mentioned, the iOS AR kit for augmented reality apps. Very, very nice. To me, this screen, of course, we're just seeing demos of ARKit, but if you doubt that Apple is working on something that's like Google Glass, I mean, look no further than that. No one's going to be sitting there holding up their iPads, four iPads pointed at a table playing a game. This is clearly sort of dog whistling the whole AR thing is coming. We've heard rumors that they've had like this prototype of smart glasses that are out there. I think on Reddit the other day, there were people in the supply chain who were doing sort of an AMA, which has got to be Apple's worst nightmare, and they were giving descriptions of what these products were like. But I mean, the demo looked amazing. The guy jumping off the table when he got shot at, just I laughed when I saw that. And the other thing with VR in general, so we got the demo from Lucasfilm where, you know, you got the developer.
Which was awesome.
Oh, I was beside myself with excitement when I'm seeing, you know, you're on Mustafar and they're creating fleets of TIE fighters, and hey, there's Darth Vader swinging a lightsaber at me. They're speaking my language. But you heard the folks at Oculus say a few months ago or last year that, hey, we would have done something on a Mac, but there's no way we can because their hardware is just laughably out of date. That's been sort of a popular perception that, hey, they can't compete in this space. If you want to develop, you got to go get yourself a PC. And they're really trying to, normally Apple will sit out in a market, right? They'll wait till something comes out. Hey, can we do something innovative or different? And it looks like they're not doing that in this case. They're trying to jump in now. I mean, it's still early days, right? I know we have the PlayStation VR. I know we have the Oculus and the Steam one, whatever that was, the HTC one. But still, this is still early days. So they're trying to prove they're still going to be relevant. The other thing that I wanted to mention there is I saw a lot of people complaining on Twitter that they were very disappointed that Apple's going with AMD for their high-end graphics. Oh, NVIDIA is so much better. But we have to remind folks, back in April we talked about this. NVIDIA is supporting macOS for things like the GTX 1080 and the Titan XP. So you can use external GPUs. And they even mentioned that during the keynote yesterday that you can do that. It's supported. You should be able to do it. So if you combine the fact that, you know, NVIDIA is supporting macOS that with official drivers for those cards, and you can use external GPUs, there's nothing stopping you if you want to be able to do that. I mean, that was the assumption that I got. Am I wrong on that?
I mean, that makes sense to me. I mean, you could load it up, right?
I think that was all that I had for this round of for our first pass at this. I know we need to probably take another crack at this and give a part two to this if we can. But I think we covered a lot in this. I mean, we had a lot of overlap with the things that we found exciting. I think 2 hours and 20 minutes, it was a lot longer than I expected. And, there were a few leaks that popped up. I mean, one of the things we'll probably talk about is the file browser that's going to be in iOS, which, you know, I hate to say this, but Steve Jobs would have never wanted a file browser in iOS. But I think it's overdue. You got to have it. It's becoming a more mature computer. It's there if you need it. You don't have to use it. You could be perfectly fine. My parents will never need the file browser, but having it there is nice. But you didn't see much in the way of leaks. That app sort of leaked about an hour, I guess, before WWDC started. So I saw the reports that morning that, you know, hey, there's a placeholder for an app called Files on iOS that was kind of from Apple that looked kind of funny. But you didn't see a lot of the way of leaks. Now, you did see the hardware leaks. Those are kind of hard to sort of put a stop to. From software, there were a lot of surprises, I think. And I think they've sort of figured out the secrecy from the software angle. Of course, they developed that all here, stateside, and there's not like a supply chain where it can leak. But I was pleasantly surprised by all the things that I didn't know going into it.
No, I mean, we didn't talk a whole lot here today about like the music kind of revamp for Apple Watch. It's supposed to be a little bit better. The App Store redesign was a big one. You know, some of the Siri enhancements, if you just want to call them that, the new voices and things like that, the musicologist, which sounds cool, but to your point earlier where they've really got to improve Siri, they've got to take this musicologist approach that they talked about, and they've got to apply it to a lot of other things for, I think, it to be able to keep up with Siri or the Google Assistant, or sorry, Amazon or the Google Assistant.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot to discuss in part two. I really want to delve into some of the stuff you touched on, particularly around Siri and how they're putting it front and center. And they're going to keep doing that, and we're 6 years into this. They're going to have to start, you know, showing that they're not only paying it lip service, but actually putting their money where their mouth is and doing something with it. But yeah, this was a really good WWDC. I think I didn't expect the announcements to go as long as they did. I honestly didn't expect, it's very un-Apple-like to announce a product that's not coming for probably another 6 months. So the fact that they announced the HomePod was really surprising to me this far out. Like if they had saved it for September.
That was a preemptive strike.
Yeah, I mean, I figure it is, but it just, you figure September when they're launching the iPhone, that's something you would have seen. We got our first significant one last thing in a long time.
And the Sonos is already on sale. So
yeah, that was. And I heard that PayPal and Venmo's stock took a tumble during the WWDC. So that's, and again, I don't want to get too far down this because we'll have plenty to talk about after that. But the power of default is a very strong thing. If I can pay someone from within iMessage instead of having to launch a separate app. Now, granted, PayPal and Venmo is owned by PayPal, have had SiriKit integration since iOS 10. So you could pull out your phone and tell Siri to pay someone through PayPal or Venmo, no problem. But wow, I mean, doing it from within iMessage is pretty transformative. And I think, you know, I said I wasn't going to do it, but I'll drop this last little bit before we call it a show. Did you guys notice that they had sort of the Apple debit card? That was part of that you could load things onto. So Apple just...
Yeah, I noticed that.
PayPal.
I mean...
It's like, who? We're coming. When was that a thing?
Not just that. Hello, Visa. Hello, MasterCard. Because that's... And they didn't really give that a lot of attention. It was just kind of... It was sort of what they showed. And it was like, you can load your Apple card with... And it's like...
Well, they just sort of rolled over it without giving it really any emphasis.
They did that thing that I do when I try to cover something and not really pay it much mind, but I still want to be able to say I told someone later on, you know, and you may sandwich it in between two other insignificant things so that, oh, yeah, you remember.
Dude, we didn't know anything about this. No, I told you last time. I said it.
Yeah, I definitely remember saying that. Remember, I talked about what I had for breakfast that morning and what was coming on TV that night.
That new debit card I invented. Oh, and also...
And also, I was going to order two top-of-the-line iPads at the same time just for my own purposes and then return one of them, probably.
Brian, your wife would like to speak with you.
Funny thing, funny side note, she sat there while I was at my parents' house watching this this keynote. She was sitting there sort of, you know, browsing the web.
Are you buying two of those?
That happened later on that day because after talking to Jim, it's like, you know, why don't I order the 10.5? He's convinced me. I'm going to do it. So, you know, I did it while I was driving through a parking lot. I just reached out, three clicks, done. All right. But no, it was definitely significant, the fact that they launched their own credit card in a sense. So,
well, when Craig was first talking about it, he was talking about, like, you could do this or do that, and then you could put money onto your card, and then if you were generous, you could, you know, gift it to a family member. And I'm thinking, yeah, but what if you don't want to spend it with Apple? What if you want that money back? And then all of a sudden he's like, or you could cash it out.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Venmo and PayPal and whatnot, it's just they're now kind of obsolete, at least for your Blue Bubble friends, your Green Bubble friends.
It's definitely a sucker punch for sure for all those other pay vendors.
Felt kind of bad for Square too, because you look at most of their business model. Now, still stores will need the Square type readers and those types of things, but
right.
Even Square, you know, we've paid each other using Square before, and having that built into the phone, I mean, how much easier will that be if we can shoot each other a couple of bucks through iMessage? That's crazy. That's bananas.
Baked in is the way to go.
That's why Apple Music has as many subscribers as it does. So we'll talk about how when the speaker comes out, Jim will be chained to Apple Music again, because you know that's not going to have Spotify integration, at least not out of the box. We'll be back to 1% or Music yep. Club.
Definitely, I'm looking forward to it.
All right, it's gonna be nice.
I think that was one of the first things I said to you guys after I watched the keynote. I didn't watch it till last night. And it's just like, damn, Apple teasing me something that I really want. It's not going to be here for 6 months. That was just so un-Apple-like. I'm like, God.
I don't know why they don't just start taking pre-orders 6 months ahead of time. I don't know. I've never understood why they don't do that.
So you don't have a heart attack. Because you'd be up at night every night. When is it coming? When is it coming? And then your head explodes.
I was like that when I had to wait a month and a half or a month or something like that for my first Apple Watch, because I ordered the Darth Vader one and everyone else had their aluminum ones in there. I was seeing all the reviews and Twitter. And I was, when will I have mine? This is insanity. Well, that should do it for this week, I think. Is there anything else you guys want to quickly mention before we call part one of two done?
I think I had a couple other things, but I'm going to save it for next week.
Yeah, I think we could all three talk about this for a long time. That's it for me.
Till we record again. Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. You can find us on Twitter. The Twitter handle for the show is @InFinLoopBack. That's @INFINLoopBack. I am @BrianB. That's @BrianB. Jim is @BigJim. That's @BigJim. And Brad is @MeesterIdle. That's @MeesterIdle. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.